This episode of Roboism is sponsored by Cards Against Humanity, who asked us not to read an ad, so enjoy the show. Thanks again to the Chicago Podcast Co-op for hooking up our sponsorships. You can learn more at chicagopodcastcoop.com. Hi, I'm Alex Cox, and this is Roboism. This week, Savannah and I continue our discussion with Adrian Choi, a robotics engineer for the traveling exhibit Robot Revolution and the organizer of Robot Riot. This is one of my favorite conversations we've ever had on the show, and I really hope you like it. Do you think the singularity will come around in our lifetime, and do you think it will be peaceful?
Oh, boy. I mean, anything's possible. I feel like the more of an engineer I became, the more pessimistic I also became.
Mm-hmm.
Like with Amazon and their drone delivery, I have zero faith in that.
Really? Why?
Well, I mean, the battery life isn't there, so you'll have to have all your distribution centers super close to wherever you're delivering to. People can shoot them out of the sky. Weather... kind of, you're at the mercy of weather and the wind. Drone technology is neat, but not really where it needs to be without being cheap enough to use for delivery versus military purposes. You don't mind if you spend like $3 million on a Predator drone, but that's not really feasible for Amazon with all the customers they have to meet and all the possible doomsday scenarios that their drones would face.
Right.
There's
a whole list of reasons.
Right. I mean, that being said, like, when I thought it was just a cute little PR move that they weren't going to follow up on, they're actually putting in a lot of effort. So who knows? Maybe I'm just not smart enough to see, like, the solutions to those problems. And that's kind of where I'm at with the singularity, too. I mean, we're doing a lot of crazy things with it. I'm not sure if I really agree with the little chart they have for it where everything paces like that. There's just a whole lot of different factors, like batteries and energy storage has to be done first before this can be changed, because if you can make batteries smaller, more efficient, you can change how mechanical things are designed, because a lot of the time you're designing things mechanically based on where the battery has to be placed because it's so big and so heavy.
Right.
And then it's just this kind of weird flow chart of things that need to be done so other things can be done.
Right.
And some fields are lagging behind and some fields are moving faster than you can keep track with. And the singularity is just such a weird concept, like machines being smarter than humans, and we don't even know what intelligence is, per se.
Exactly.
So, I think that if we do reach it, we won't realize it, because it's just such a weird concept.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I've never heard that as an answer, even from, like, engineers. What do you mean, like, we won't even realize it? Like, just... AI will exist amongst us and we just won't be aware of it?
I think so. I mean, I think it'll exist as kind of a ghost behind all these other systems. Like I said before, I don't think a whole lot of researchers are researching AI for the sake of having a robot friend that has an opinion, like in the movie Her. Like, they're all looking at it from something that can profit from it, like data sorting or marketing or espionage, things like that, encryption, making things secret. And I think that we will stumble upon the technology and the ability to make that, and no one will really realize it's there until someone has that cute idea. I mean, and engineering in general, a lot of the time, it's solutions that don't have problems. So, for example, like I was saying before with drones, we had the technology for drones for a while, and then when we added onto it to make it more autonomous and more robotic, per se, rather than making them RC helicopters. But people are coming up with all these crazy applications for them. So there are some biologists that wanted to collect data on whale breath to see where they've been, what their diets have been, and from that they can get all this other data, like where they've been navigating, where they've been swimming, things like that. And they had the cute idea to have a drone fly in while whales went up for air, to, you know, pretty much fly through all the water they spray up when they breach. Is that the word?
Yep, that's right.
Okay, when they breach for air. And you have other animal researchers that make robots that look like icebergs that swim on the surface of water so they can observe polar bears in the Arctic without getting too close to them.
Cool.
I mean, the technology's made and then people come up with their own applications for them. And I think that's going to be how we find out that we made the singularity. like it'll either be adapted from existing technology, so essentially we already reached it, just we didn't realize it,
mm-hmm.
or it'll just kind of be born from it.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, but I think, I mean, it's such a vague concept that I do think we'll stumble upon it more than like it's a goal that we set and reach.
Right. I really like this answer because that means that my Siri theory could be correct in that I've heard people debate like what is going to is true AI going to be developed for the consumer market or military first? And like Siri has all this information and all this data, and what if someone just accidentally somehow like she becomes self-aware and then it's a thing? And I know that it can't actually happen, but it's fun to think about.
Right. And then, well, and there's all sorts of other, I would look up the Chinese room idea. Have you ever heard that theory?
No, what's that?
The Chinese room. So imagine this. There's a man in a room, and he
doesn't... Wait, I have heard this. Sorry.
Continue. No worries. So he doesn't speak a lick of Chinese. He knows nothing about the Chinese language, nothing about Chinese culture. But he's got a book. And in this book, he can see phonetic words spelled out in Chinese. And then he has a list of English responses about how he should reply back. So someone on the outside of the room slips him messages. Actually, no, it's symbols, not phonetic sounds. So they slip in notes written in Chinese, and the man who knows nothing about Chinese and can't learn anything about Chinese given his limited resources receives a note, and he has a little instruction book that says, if you see these symbols, send this note in English, and then send it back out into the real world. You can imagine the Chinese room and the man inside of it as a machine, and the person who speaks Chinese outside of it as the user. So, for example, the user might send in a note saying, you know, how are you in Chinese? The man doesn't know what the question was. He just is instructed to send a response back in English or back in Chinese. So let me take a step back. The man's instruction books. He gets an instruction book, and it has the question in Chinese, and it has the response in Chinese. And all he knows is that he has to give that Chinese response back. But at no point does he truly understand what the Chinese question is and what he's answering back with.
Right.
So the Chinese speaker outside the room, the user, will submit the question in Chinese and receive an answer in Chinese. But at no point does the man inside the room know what the heck's going on.
Right.
And that's what people call the Chinese room theory, where the man in the Chinese room is the computer, and it really has no idea what it's doing. It's just following out a list of instructions.
And it has no way of ever learning Chinese, considering
right,
what
like,
it's available. Yeah.
Theoretically. So is that machine truly self-aware? Is it smart, or is it just following a list of instructions? Is it, like, it has, like, a machine at the moment has no real motive to do anything outside of it's been told to. Like, for example, a robot that plays soccer. It's been programmed to kick the ball in the goal. It has no skin in the game. Its life is not made better or worse in terms of whether or not it scores a goal.
Right.
It's just following that list of instructions. So, I mean, that's what I'm talking about, vague concepts with the singularity, self-awareness, intelligence. Like, what is that to a machine? Like, is that self-preservation? Is that, you know, the ability for a machine to make its life better? Is that the ability to procreate and make more robots and design itself and seek out a better lifestyle? We don't have real definitions for the singularity, which makes it kind of frustrating because we're all waiting for the singularity, but like, what is it? And that's kind of like half the problem or half the reason behind my response, where it's like, we won't know when we achieve it because we don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
Well, at least I don't.
Elon Musk just needs to calm down a little bit.
I was almost convinced he wasn't human until he cried.
Oh. Wait, why did Elon Musk cry?
Well, I didn't think it was human because he just does all this crazy stuff, and I'm like, he's got to be like an alien or something. But he cried because I think it was Lance Armstrong who said this. He said that SpaceX was dumb and private spaceflight was dumb. And Elon Musk cried in an interview when he was asked how he felt about that, because Lance Armstrong was one of his biggest heroes.
Oh, I'm
it's
sad
like
now.
I can't be jealous of you anymore because now I know you cry and bleed.
Well, this could all be part of, like, my theory is that I have a lot of theories on the show. Like, he's so against developing artificial intelligence, but he just happens to, you know, make the best electronic cars that are, like, have the ability to drive themselves. And they get firmware updates all the time. And he's, what is the thing that he...
Tesla.
No, no, the like program or organization that he is a part of or like pays for that is basically building up a defense against AI.
I don't know. Do you want me to look it up?
What Elon Musk, his like anti-AI squad. But all of this could be a front and he could be a robot.
Tech Titans?
Nope, no.
Just kidding.
There's a bunch of them. Like, there's...
There are a lot of... Like, there's no like government organization, but there are people pushing for there to be
open AI.
Well, there's a campaign to stop killer robots, which is a thing, which is more aimed towards robots that have like licenses to kill, which technically some do. Scary, right?
Yeah.
But no, there's a whole bunch of them, and some of them have credit, and some of them are just like tinfoil hat clubs. But I think, I think it's good to be cautious about it because laws lag behind technology, as we've seen with this whole drone fiasco. I mean, for years you could buy drones at Radio Shack, and only now are we finding that, you know, people are flying drones into police helicopters and firefighting helicopters during disaster scenarios. They're flying them into airports, and they're using them to peek on people while they're changing in their condo apartments. And, I mean, no one was really held accountable, and there was no process to review who had a drone and who didn't. And the FCC is actually rolling out that law now in terms of drone registration. But, I mean, you can't unring a bell, Scooter. I mean, the damage has kind of been done. I mean, drones are out there. And you won't really be able to catch them and gather them until they get back. And there's all sorts of crazy stories going on about the Yakuza delivering drugs via drones and prison riots starting because people are dropping meth off in prison yards and...
I don't want to think that's cool, but I mean, like, if it was in a show,
way to hack the system, I guess.
Hack the planet.
Yeah.
So I wonder then, do you think that one day their like legislation will invoke like Asimov's three laws of robotics or something like that? Because right now, obviously, there are robots that... Well, I mean, in his law, it applies to robots with just with like true AI. But obviously, like now drones, you know, they're number one. Not all military drones are number one objective is to eliminate humans.
Yeah.
Well, we do kind of already have a system in place, and I like it a lot better than vague philosophical questions, Asimov.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Thought you were being cute. I mean, we have a lot of industry standards with robotics. So, for example, the RIA, which I have no memory of what it actually stands for, and a few other safety organizations, depending on what kind of robot you have, they have strict outlines on what robots need to do in specific situations. So, for example, a factory robot that moves and cuts things at, you know, hundreds of times a second and, like, can bend steel girders and crazy stuff like that. Like, it has to be able to stop if a human approaches within a few feet of it within X amount of seconds.
Wow.
It's like there are committees and teams that specifically outline what these robots specifically need to do. Same with drones, same with all sorts of other robots, including like the robots you might see filming football games. They all have very strict outlines on what they need to exactly do. So when they make up these... Right, so they sit down with the engineers and they're like, what is this robot capable of? What could possibly go wrong? Here's all the things that this has to, you know, clear and be tested for before it can ever walk and play with humans. Mm-hmm. Instead of just like, don't hurt people, okay? Perfect. You understand? Like, and I think that'll, like, things like that would be hard-coded into, quote-unquote, artificial intelligent machines. More strict things being like, if an object that looks like a human approaches you and it looks running at you and you're here in this position, you have to react this certain specific way versus, like, you have to figure out what to do based on these vague parameters.
Yeah.
So I think robot safety in general is pretty good. And the way a lot of machines are designed, you can't really override safety. So before I was the lead robotics specialist at the Museum of Science and Industry, I was a field engineer for a company called Rockwell Automation that does a lot of factory automation. So I programmed and designed a lot of systems for factories to automate their factory processes. But a lot of that was there. Like, you have to receive permission from a human via a series of button presses to do a job, and you have to stop in case, like, something looks like it's about to overheat or the conditions didn't look right and it was about to be dangerous. And usually these are all defined by committees made by expert engineers. So
everything's safe.
Yeah, no three laws. Sorry, guys.
But there's more than three laws. That's even better. Well, speaking of safety, do we want to move on to...
We should talk about Robot Riot.
Robot Riot.
Robot Riot, yay. Okay, so I got to go to Robot Riot. This is a couple weeks ago, and I went because a friend of the office, Zach, knows Adrian from high school, and... yeah, and Robot Riot is this event that you have at Gaming Under the Influence, which is in here in Chicago, in Bucktown. We're in Bucktown, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Technically, yes.
Yes, in a warehouse. And, well, I don't know. Adrian, do you want to explain the premise of Robot Riot a little better? You're closer to it.
Yeah, so Robot Riot was kind of made out of frustration. So I think a lot of us remember Robot Wars and BattleBots and shows like that growing up.
Mm-hmm.
But it was inaccessible and kind of boring to watch after a while.
Right, because the robots just, like, destroy each other, right? And it's
Yeah, pretty much. So the goal of BattleBots and Robot Wars was two robots enter, one robot leaves.
Mm-hmm.
So make a robot that can ruin the other robot's day. Which, you know, in theory sounds really exciting, but... there's a concept in gaming called min-maxing,
mm-hmm.
where over the course of time, people will find out how to get the maximum results from the minimum amount of effort. So, like, what's the easiest way to get the most points in a game?
Mm-hmm.
And people found out that you can do that in a variety of really boring ways. So people have probably seen wedges, which are just, like, these weird, like, right angle triangles with wheels that move throughout the arena in some of these older BattleBots episodes, and they just flip robots over and the robots can't do anything once they're flipped over.
End.
Right. Or what I affectionately call the weed whacking robots, where they just spin really fast and just ruin the other robot's day. But when everyone in the competition has the same robot, it's super boring to watch.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where you know who would win before the match started, just based on the lineup. And there would be some cool robots that would enter, even in this latest season of BattleBots that they just tried to revamp. Like, you had this one woman who entered this robot that had this cool gripper in front, and it had, like, this toy brain that glue all sorts of crazy colors, and it made sounds, and it got destroyed within, like, a few seconds of the match starting by, like, some dumb, like, butt robot. And the other frustrating part about both those competitions and shows is that they were completely inaccessible. So, like, usually they were entered in by, like, professional engineers who had these huge shops and all this money, but it's, like, it was getting people interested in engineering without really having a way to get them, you know, in the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, all right, if you're interested, go to school and then be rich and have enough time and money to build a robot in your spare time.
So, that will get destroyed.
Come back in 30 years, kids.
Make a wedge and a weed whacker and,
right.
and so, have your day ruined.
All of the Robot Riot robots were all judged based on creativity for the robot idea, right?
Right. So Robot Riot was something I kind of created in a frustrated response to BattleBots and Robot Wars. So it's based on a competition made by Daiju Ishikawa in Japan, and he throws something there called Hebocon, Hebocon, which apparently roughly translates to crappy robot competition. So at a culture fair, he got 31 participants to make crappy robots, but he specifically looked for people that had zero electronics and robotics and engineering experience.
Awesome.
mostly because to make things more interesting, to make them more dramatic. So they were playing a game of robot sumo where one robot has to push the other robot out of the ring. And they had so many crazy designs. You can actually find a YouTube video online if you just search up Hebocon. Some of the robots that were entered was a tissue box that moved by like six rotating dildos. You had like Barbie dolls.
Oh, I love Dildobot.
Dildobot was a dream. I'm really upset that no one entered one in Robot Riot.
There's the future.
There's so many more coming up. Some people had like Barbies taped together with spinning motors that would just randomly go out in the field. People entered wind-up toys that had googly eyes taped to them, all sorts of crazy things. And it was a spectacle. It was great. Everyone had fun. I mean, the winners were ashamed that they won because they were tryhards. The losers had a blast. It just really showed off like how creative you can get with limited resources and information. And it got people actually interested in serious robotics, which is great because when you have more people joining in on the fun rather than, you know, the typical stereotypical Dilbert engineers.
Right.
Like, I just, like, I'm very excited about robots, if you have not already noticed. And, like, I guess growing up, I was completely, I didn't understand why other people weren't also super hype about robots and why they called me a nerd. It's like, well, what's wrong with you? What, like, do you have a condition? So, like, I made a robot, right, because I wanted more people in on the fun. I wanted to get more people excited about it. And I think we're headed in that direction.
I think it worked. It made me like super inspired to want to make a robot. I haven't like messed with robot engineering very much at all. But
And you really don't need to, because I mean, part of what we do outside of the actual events is that we hold workshops. So
yeah, I wanted to talk to you about those. Yes. Because you mentioned that at Robot Riot. So have you done workshops already, or is that like a future plan?
We've held workshops. The turnout has been kind of disappointing.
Okay.
Mostly because we're still in our early stages. So we've only had two robot rides, one in December 9th of 2015 and one on January 23rd. So it's been very hard to find people willing to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the goal was that we would show people what Robot Ride is, and when they see what kind of robots show up and who's designing them, and you know how simple it really is to get them excited to do it. Because
mm-hmm.
as you've seen, like a lot of those robots were, you know, kits we picked up at local robot shops and did some simple modifications on them. And the workshops before, we tried to meet twice a week, and we just had a catch-all thing where anyone who wanted to show up, meet up at Geek Bar or Robot City Workshop, two Chicago institutions. And if you have questions about your robot, come on over. If you have a sketch on what you want to make, let's make it a reality. Let's talk
awesome.
About it over a beer.
Yeah.
It's great. So it's mostly about enabling people to do what they want to do and all the crazy ideas they have, and then also just throwing a big party to celebrate that.
Yeah. I love that one of the goals for Robot Riot was to just make robot engineering accessible, because it's so great.
Yeah, that's so, because we talk about that a lot, like how it feels like robotics is really inaccessible to us, and just the creativity aspect of it and like getting people excited about STEM is just so awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I've got a lot of beef with like how STEM is advertised and the outreach. I mean, I think we're making gains, but still there's a lot about STEM that's inaccessible and we don't give the opportunity. And then even when people are in STEM, like we make it really hard for certain groups and types of people to stay in STEM.
Yeah.
Like I've seen a lot of people from underrepresented minorities, women, LGBT, blacks, Latinos, any like people from that are not typical engineers.
Straight white dudes.
Right. They just give up, especially women. I mean, we always harp about outreach to women, like get the girls in an all-female like robotics team in high school, and then fuck them once they get that engineering degree. They're on their own.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to deal with all-male environments. You have to deal with harassment in the workplace and the psychology behind that. I've seen a lot of, you know, female engineers far smarter than me that, like, have gone into sales or a completely different industry because, like, they gave up always having to constantly prove themselves.
Yeah, that breaks my heart.
Right. And I feel like engineering, I mean, outside of, you know, the demograph, straight white male, there's also this attitude in it that really irks me. So, like, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't say I'm a traditional engineer anymore, but I'd want to shake it up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want people's impressions of engineering to be like the old boys club or the Big Bang Theory. Mm-hmm. Like, let's bring in some color and personality in this game. Because,
yeah.
I mean, like, when you make STEM so homogenous, you're only moving forward fields in directions that favor that community. So, for example, I have an example for this.
Oh, boy.
So, face tracking robots.
Mm-hmm.
Once upon a time, there was a certain museum looking for face tracking robots for a certain exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
And they found a research lab that made such a robot. And it could easily recognize everyone in the lab. But the moment you tested it on, say, an adult woman or a small child or anyone of an ethnic minority, the robot had no idea what it was looking at.
Oh my
because
God.
The robot was always being tested on older white men.
Great.
Of course. So,
this is horrifying.
That reminds me of like when digital camera face recognition came out and mm-hmm. how like terrible it was. Like it's getting better now, but
well, even camera, like the filmmaking industry, cameras are made to film white people. Like like people spend hundreds and thousands of dollars to make like black folks just look better. Oh God, like I wonder how much more expensive Star Wars was because of John Boyega. It's really upsetting. Like,
yeah. Well, even so, then, like look at like the fact that John Boyega and this is how bad it is. I don't even know the name of Ray's
Daisy Ridley. No worries.
Daisy Ridley.
Yeah.
That's how bad it is. Like they were the two main characters and there's zero focus on them in the marketing.
Yep.
It's mm-hmm. all the white guy in the mask.
Yeah.
Who cried for most of the movie. And I mean, I know it's kind of goofy for the half white, half Asian male engineer to be preaching about diversity, but like we need to shake up the game because when you only have one group like in STEM, like intentional or otherwise, they're only going to have that perspective mm-hmm. on their problems. Because STEM people are problem solvers. Well, most of the time. Sometimes we just want to make LEDs glow rainbow colors. But sometimes we solve problems. And we can't solve the world's problems if we only got, you know, one team playing the game.
Yeah.
So I think with Robot Ride, for the most part, I wanted to do it because it seems really fun. So I'm not going to make it out like I made a Robot Ride to save the world. But there's a lot of things I hope to achieve through it. So getting more people in the game, getting people excited about it, and just bringing in something STEM-related that has more boom to it versus mm-hmm. like the maker fairs are nice, but they're a little too safe and accessible. Like we need something with more pow to it. Like mm-hmm. less Big Bang Theory, more. No, I'm not going to say Wrigleyville.
oh no.
More, yeah. more.
Yeah.
More.
I thought Robot Riot did I thought you did a really great job with Robot Riot, making it like accessible and exciting and like inspiring. And it just, I don't know, being there, there was just so much like hype in the crowd and it felt really inclusive. Adrian made a robot called AmericaBot, which had two American flags and an eagle figurine on it. And all it could do was wave the flags and go forward. And he let me pilot it. And it was such a great time. And it was just so easy to like get on stage and be a part of everything. And really nice. And also AmericaBot like got crowd favorite, which was very, very cool too.
Yeah. So another part of this competition that sets it apart from just strict like two robots enter, one robot leaves is that the problem with making crappy robots is sometimes people just enter RC cars and tape teddy bears to them and call it a day, and then they win because it's just an RC car.
Mm-hmm.
So the way you move from round to round is that the crowd favorite moves. So you can win the fight, but you can lose the battle because let's say you do end the match in 5 seconds, but the robot you pushed off like farted glitter and played Happy Birthday on repeat. Like it's all about what the crowd wants to see move on. And if they don't want to see the Wedge or the Weed Whacker move on, they can see, you know,
the glitter bot move on. Yeah.
So it's definitely more about spectacle because if BattleBots is boxing, I want Robot Ride to be WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I love everything about this so much. Wow.
Yeah. I love the idea of like rewarding the creativity rather mm-hmm. than.
Yeah, and I think now that Robot Ride's getting out there, we're going to be able to recruit more. I'm really targeting Columbia School of the Art Institute, a lot of the local art schools and a lot of the local art studios to join. We didn't have one art studio, Muffin Shotzi, submit a robot. They submitted Florida Bot that was supposed to rotate and distribute bath salts across the field.
I was wondering, it didn't work though, did it?
It didn't, and that's part of crappy robot competitions.
It was fun. It was a fun time.
Yeah, but we're getting a lot of interesting groups that want to play with us. Like we're getting a lot of the maker fairs, a lot of schools. Someone's trying to see if we can scale it down for kids under 21.
Cool.
So I'm trying to do that because I think that would be great.
Yeah.
But I really want to harp in like diversity here. Like I don't want this to be an old boys club. I don't want this to be like every other makerspace in the city where it's just kind of like engineers making things for engineers.
Right.
It's like, we got to shake it up. We got to do more. We got to be better at this, guys.
Yeah. So what are some like resources you would suggest to people who want to get into making robots or want to get into STEM?
Definitely find a person and ask them questions. I mean, I think a lot of people might have like someone that like tinkers a little bit, and just ask them, like, bring them like a printer you bought at the thrift store and offer to like take it apart with them and see how it all works. Tape batteries to wires and see what makes smoke and what turns. There's a lot of online resources that are really great. I would say find something you're passionate about, or wait until next Halloween to make a super cool Halloween costume.
Cool.
there's a site called adafruit.com that I like, A-D-A-F-R-U-I-T. And they sell little robotics components and little LEDs and stuff, but they also have this learning section where they can teach you step-by-step how to do certain projects. And a lot of them are really fun. Like they have sneakers that glow different colors if you step on the ground, where they teach you a little bit of programming, a little bit of wiring, a little bit of about sensors, and you can gain all the skills you want to do if you follow those guides.
Cool.
A lot of makers online are very open source. Mm-hmm. So even if you just type in, like, do-it-yourself robot, a lot of people are really proud of what they make, so they'll have, like, a guide on
how they did it,
what they bought, where they bought it, and how to do it.
Yeah.
Instructables.com is pretty great for that. And you'll just want to find something that interests you personally. I think that's the easiest. So if you're a gardener, try making something that, you know, monitors water levels and tweets at you whenever the water's too low. Or if you're really into like fashion and costume design, look for something that like makes light up features on like your bag or something.
Yeah.
Tie it into your interest at first, because I think it'll be more engaging. And once you get over that first project, the rest kind of follow. They fall in line.
That's really good advice.
And then there's a lot of local resources for you Chicagoans. There's Robot City Workshop right off the Belmont Red Line. That's a partner with Robot Riot. And they also help us throw a few workshops. You can buy kits there. They'll give you recommendations. If you want to enter Robot Riot, they'll tell you things. Yeah.
Yeah. I also really loved that the Robot Riot prize for first place was a kit of robot parts, and the prize for last place was a kit of robot parts.
Yeah, so
really, oh my gosh.
Really great, like, cherry on top.
So those prizes were first place in design and worst place in design. So I wanted to make sure that, like, we can continue getting the strong group of people always entering, and also to give people that didn't do so hot a chance to come back and,
be better next time.
Be better.
Yeah.
Like, don't be crappy. Well, be crappy, but not too crappy. Because I'm really hoping that people, begin with crappy robots and then make something cooler and cooler. That like they just keep re-entering the new, like, upgrading robots or making more advanced things, and like through the workshops and through some self-study they can make really neat things and maybe take that with them in the rest of the aspects of their lives.
Yeah.
Like if a robot breaks, like I entered a robot called Chinese New Year, and in Robot Riot we have these things called grudge matches. So if the pilots or the builders of each robot agree before a match to make it a grudge match, the losing robot's builder has to destroy their own robot after the match.
Oh my god.
And we take
with a sledgehammer.
Right. We take it very seriously, because if you agree to a grudge match and you don't break your robot if you have to, you get a permanent ban from the competition. Mm-hmm. I risked it and I lost. So I had to destroy my own robot.
We have this on footage of this.
Yeah.
We will
list a source on where to get this footage. But yeah, I mean, Robot Riot's just this huge spectacle. I mean, don't make anything you won't miss if it gets broken with a sledgehammer. Have fun with it. Don't be too serious. There's prizes for everyone. It's not really everyone gets a trophy, but like, we appreciate you for coming out here for this mad scientist idea. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we wanted to give people tools, physical or otherwise, to keep coming back, have an excuse to come back, have some beer.
Yeah. All right, I think we're running short on time.
Yeah.
So we should probably
wrap up.
We should wrap up. This is like probably like the best episode we've ever done.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, this is so great.
We went all over the place.
We did. We hit a lot of topics.
So, Adrian, where can people find you on the internet?
I don't really have a thing. So I would say, if you're interested in Robot Riot and would like to be added to our email list, you can email robotriotcompetition@gmail.com. We will soon have an official website and more details about future events in Chicago and possibly elsewhere in the world. But in the meantime, get added to that email list and you'll find out. We're talking with people in Japan and Europe, so things are going to get real exciting real fast.
Awesome.
Wow. That's
so
big.
Cool. Well, yeah, and you'll keep us updated, so we'll post Robot Riot news to our Twitter and everything too.
Tweet.
for the listeners.
And speaking of Twitter, you should follow us at RoboismCast.
Yeah.
And
visit our site at roboism.fm. And we also have a Facebook page and we have a Tumblr.
Yeah, roboismcast.tumblr.com if that's your thing.
If you're into that.
If you want to email us, we are roboismcast@gmail.com. You can also rate us on iTunes or recommend us on Overcast, and we would really appreciate it. And this has been Roboism.
Thank you
for listening. Crashing down, I'm a burning of a being. Being a robot gives me the biggest round. My life. I have places to go, people to see. I should be optimistic. I have the wires inside me. Why the hell?